Are you ready to learn? Because my super experienced guests are ready to share some really valuable information. Make sure and listen all the way to the end to get help and support. So let's start with the best audio experience.
Hello guys, welcome to our show. Today we discuss about SEO, how you can get results in SEO field, because it's not simple today. That was many years ago. I remember 12 years ago when I started my online journey. Competition was low. Many companies didn't consider this channel, and I created content for the sake of having it. Google ranked well. I bought more backlinks than my competitors had, and I got great results. But I changed this approach many times because of Google. Google often updates algorithms, if I remember correctly, like 7,000 times a year. So most of them are slightly, but some of them core updates. And I'm so excited to discuss this topic with Dave Davis. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great. Want to learn more about SEO and iPhone? I can't get all skills, even a teeny percent of all skills about SEO. I'm a student in this life. I can learn every single day, but it's important to focus on priorities. I found that many SEO specialists, experts, they pay attention to specific direction, you know, they consider their strong sides to get results. Dave, before we start, just tell more about yourself, experience, background, and why you choose SEO.
I'll go back to the last question first. I chose SEO back in the very early 2000s. So it was a very different plane. It was the easy version of SEO that you were talking about, sort of like alluding to earlier, where it's like, oh, 3.5% keyword density, not a thing anymore, folks, but it was at the time. And just buy a whack of links and you're good to go, right? Like, that was pretty much all it took at the time. I chose it because I worked for a hosting company doing sales and went, you know what? It's easier when my phone rings than when I have to do outbound calling and cold calling. So I started optimizing our own site and then went, oh, okay, let's do some affiliate marketing then to get some extra revenue when I saw how easy it was. Again, it was very easy back then. And then soon had enough money to go, oh, well, I'm going to be an affiliate marketer then because that's easy. Then I got lonely because affiliate marketing is lonely. Like, it's like you're sitting alone in a room all the time. So then with my wife, I started a company in 2004 and then ended up later going in-house for a machine learning company just a couple of years ago. So I'm doing their SEO and now managing growth strategy.
Nice, nice. Dave, when we had the first episode, AI was not the case that we have today. Yeah, and we spoke on June 2022 in November 30. 2022, ChatGPT appeared on this world, and it's interesting because I used AI before ChatGPT. Today I can use a lot more because it's important for me to save my time. But you know, I found that many content creators overuse AI, so they use generic prompts. And once I got a request from a customer who told me that he's going to create 20,000 pages with AI. And I asked him, why you need to do it? He replied, because I want to cover all topics about my niche. I don't know why you need to cover all topics. Even if you create 5-10 pages, you can get a lot of traffic. But 20,000 pages, low-quality content, even if you have 5-10, Google might not recognize this high-quality content you might have. So can you tell your methods of using AI and how to get results by using AI?
Yeah, I mean, AI is a really, really interesting thing. And there's a few different ways it can be used. And for when we're referring to AI right now, and when I'm answering, I'll go generative text, like you'd mentioned ChatGPT. So let's go Bard, ChatGPT, right? You know, the different GPTs that would be out there, or text generation in general. So we'll ignore the other AI that we could be using, or I'll be excluding like image, video, stuff like that. As far as the using of it, it serves three really important functions for me, me personally, in my workflow, and everybody's workflow is different. So I really, really enjoy it for ideation. So I don't know what I want to write about. So, okay, let's like head in there and figure out what we're going to write about. Like, so give me a bunch of ideas to write about around this top level topic, right? Like neural networks, right? Like give me 10 good article titles for articles on neural networks and brief descriptions of them, right? Like, and you know, written for a level of a grade 12, right? Or whatever, right? Like you can get some really, really specific with like, you know, sort of fine tuning and prompt engineering, you know, so ideation is great. Then I also find it very, very helpful once you've done your first batches of research. So for example, I'm working on a script right now to automate part, but you can do this just sort of like naturally. You can do this using available systems right now that will actually create sort of, it'll prompt engineer for us by connecting to new Google's knowledge graph and going, okay, you're targeting this keyword. Okay, I've like scraped the like, you know, a few pages that are already ranking for that query. You know, and look at, you can use a model called Beautiful Soup if you're wondering to do that, folks at home. So you can sort of scrape those pages, then use the knowledge graph, pull the entities from it and go, okay, here's the entities that are on Google's knowledge graph. Here's the like context of that page that they're pulled from that I know ranks well. Here's the thing that I'm trying to rank for. Okay, now craft me an article outline on that. So again, we're just getting into fine-tune engineering of things, but basically based on stuff that we've done, I'm trying to automate the research, but right now that you would be doing with the research, or you can go targeting, you know, including sections on this, this, and this, because for goodness sake, we should be taking some time to go and actually view websites. Like here's what the top 10 are doing, right? Actually like visit these pages and go, oh, I noticed that all of them have these sections, right? I know that all of them have these types, you know, and include them in and going, making sure to include headings that include these things, right? This broken down and then creating an outline. And there's nothing wrong with having it generate preliminary content. So would you want to, in my opinion, this is again, just my opinion, Google might go, no, they shouldn't even generate your preliminary content. Sometimes you can have a hard time getting started. So, okay. And generate me the intro paragraph for this article I'm about to write. I'm not saying use it, but I'm saying it, this system understands how these things get worded. So now you've created an outline. Now you can feed it back in the outline and go, here's an outline for an article. Write me the intro two paragraphs, right? And like have it get started. Now you're gonna have to change it because you're gonna have to put it into your own words. You're gonna have to put it in your own context, but it really just gets you going from there and moving forward. Now outside of that sphere, because I'd mentioned three, an area that I really, really like generative AI is in the area of paid search. Now this is getting a little bit outside, but if you just, I always like to copy what works or be inspired, not copy, be inspired by what works. So going over to your results page for a query, and this even works, you can translate this information over to organic and going, okay, here's a bunch of like the titles that are working. Here's a bunch of the descriptions that are working. And then going over into ChatGPT or Bard. I find Bard better for outlines. I find ChatGPT superior for generating ad copy and for some preliminary research, but I find Bard does a better job at outlines. That's just my experience in the sectors that I looked at. But then going in and going, now give me 10 more article headlines, right? Under this character count. Give me four more. Some of them are going to be crap because it really fails in obvious places. You'll go like, I'm a company named X, and it'll go like, it'll think that like company is your company. Like it'll make stupid mistakes because it's not, despite what some people might say, it's not AGI. It's not actually intelligent. It's just regurgitating back to you some stuff that it thinks. It'll make stupid mistakes, but it can provide just some insight. And even when it's wrong, it can provide that little gem that goes, oh, okay, it was wrong, but I see where it was going. Right, I see that there's a unique idea in there that it pulled from some other website that I've never thought before, and generating that. So that was a very long answer, I think, to what I probably could have been a little quicker on. But those are my main uses for AGI in text.
Yeah,
or not AGI, generative text.
Yeah, I love it. So valuable. You know, you I asked simple question, but you shared checklist what I need to do, you know, how I can play with AI. Love it. Awesome. Yeah. So you still provide deep research to feed AI with the right data to get unique results. Love it. Awesome. Yeah. Because I see when people ask prompts like how to play guitar, how to lose weight. It doesn't work, guys. 100 million users will use totally the same prompts, you know. So, yeah, if you want to stand out from the rest, just research more deeply to get the right data and feed AI. AI can help if you give the right data. Love it. Awesome. Awesome. Okay, Dave, my next question about creating the right strategy. You know, what I see, usually see, you know, when people open SEMrush, Ahrefs, Google Keyword Planner, Ubersuggest, CRNK, no, it doesn't matter. Great keyword research tools, and they usually see high volume keywords. You know, type any keyword, weight loss, and in the top 10, high volume keywords. And most of them, you know, they take their heads, wow, I want to get this traffic, I want to rank it, but it's hard. It's really hard. For example, if I take keyword SEO, I need to compete with Neil Patel, Moz, Ahrefs, big companies in the top 10. And in the second, it's hard to sell SEO services by having this keyword. So it's hard to get, it's hard to sell, because I remember when one webmaster shared with me how he lost 400,000 traffic because Google dropped his ranking positions, but he didn't lose any sales. So he got a lot of traffic that didn't convert. Can you tell about creating the right strategy, how to find keywords that will sell in the end? And it's not about traffic, it's more about sales.
Yeah, well, and that's something to remember. I mean, of course, the exception to that would be publishers, right? Like publishers, it's about traffic because their sales are in ad impressions. But them as an aside, the real, well, quote unquote, real world, right? Like e-com, B2C, B2B, you know, type sites where there's revenue in place. I think you bring up a really, really important point, which is this is about money. This isn't about ego. This isn't about, is my traffic up? Really, the traffic is the means to the end. It's not the end goal. The end goal is I have enough work to pay my bills and you know, the bank isn't going to take my house, right? Like that's what really we're trying to do here. I think the strategy depends, of course, on the types of site, but there are some basic rules that you can go in at any given time. And you listed a couple of tools that are actually all those tools you listed, SEMrush, Ahrefs, and Keyword Planner, all three of those are on my like just default jump into all three research strategy. There's some others in there, but I think it was interesting that you were using three that I'm like, yep, those would be the first three I'd probably launch in with. There's, I guess, at the core, 2/3 sides that I would want to be looking at when coming up with my strategy. And one of them involves, I need money to grow. So different people are approaching things differently here, but I'm going, when I started Beanstalk with Mary, we were bootstrapping. We had like, beyond what we basically had like $500-$600 to actually put into this thing, right? So it's like, I need something that will be generating revenue quickly to help afford growth. If you're going in this basically, ignore me if you're like, I have $30 million in like VC capital right now. This doesn't apply to you. but if you need quick revenue to support growth, then it's a different path than if you're like, oh, okay, I have a lot of revenue. I can afford to just like take a loss for a bit and to grow quickly. Because if you have to afford your growth, which is a scenario I found myself in, and I think a lot of people do, you need to be picking targets that you can get quickly. So the research that I do in those scenarios, and most people are in something similar to that. Hopefully you have more than like $500 to like support your growth on. But if you're limited in what you have to afford at that time, what you need to be doing is looking first at which keywords can I get now? So I would go over and begin keyword research, go to Keyword Planner, go to SEMrush. I like SEMrush because it has like the trend data next to the keyword. So you can make sure that like something didn't just like spike for like the last 2 months and make your monthly data look like, oh, that's a lot of traffic per month. But when you look, it's like, oh no, it spiked. It's going to be gone in a month, right? Like it's in like a high point or something, or like, you know, ugly sweaters. Yeah, that's great in November and early December, right? But like it's gone after that, right? Like if you have something like that. So finding those sweet spots, I would go in, pull my keyword, like take a look at the keywords, but then also have up Ahrefs because I find it a better tool for this purpose, and then start dropping in the keywords into a browser, start looking at the top 10 sites. You can use SEO Quake or something like that to automatically pull your metrics if you want. But start dropping them in and going, what kind of backlink profile am I looking at from these sites that rank? And start working your way down that search volume list until you start hitting people that are in similar areas. I'm not saying everything is links, and you can argue links are getting more or less valuable. That is inside, but something that's in that zone of like, I can compete. You can't compete with Amazon. If you just look at their link profile, you see you can't, right? I'm assuming we're not talking to like eBay here, like other companies that would have like massive backlink profiles that might be able to pull that off. So you need to first find the ones you can get fast, then build your content strategy. Go, okay, these are ones that I'm actually in the zone of getting, with an awareness for what's my next level. Not, yes, I want weight loss, or yes, I want SEO, or yes, I want whatever, right? Like your big term is. Great, build yourself a 3 to 5 year strategy. But like be aware of where you are and what the next thing is, because that's where you're gonna start link building for right now. You're gonna start building for the next thing you're about to be doing. So the type of content you're gonna wanna create is the content to rank, the supporting content that you're going to need. So you're going to want to pick keywords for that, but just like the stuff that'll make you authoritative on that. And then additionally, start doing some research into which type of content is attracting links in my niche and what's their deployment strategy for those. Probably social. You might even do a little paid on top of that. But basically, if you want to get to the doing that next level of keywords, you're going to need the links to support the site strength to get there. So you need to both target a content strategy to rank for now to pay the bills, but you also need to be developing a content strategy to acquire the links for the next set of keywords. I wouldn't even worry too much about building the content for that next set of keywords right now, right? Like worry about these first two. And then over time, you can start to grow up from there. And that's sort of to build this like staging setup. If you come into questions, and I ended up spending part of my budget on this, where I was like, I don't know. I've got like three keywords, right? I was starting an SEO company at the time. And it's like, okay, is it search engine placement, search engine positioning, search engine optimization, search engine marketing? It was slightly different queries at the time. Here's the ones that are easiest. Which one works? Okay. Grab your target market, and then I just launched a paid campaign on it and just went, I don't know. And I don't have enough money to keep this going, but I can see which one is driving longer page views on my site, right? I can see which one is driving people to contact. I didn't even actually have enough money to afford to know which ones were actually going to work because I didn't have enough to get statistical significance on that because I didn't have the budget to put towards it. But I did get enough to know which keywords are driving people to my contact page or to my services pages. So there was enough for that. So you'd have to decide how much budget do I have. But I did hit a spot in my own life where I was having to decide between a few and make those decisions on paths where it was like groupings of content. And that's just a way you can filter out really quickly. And I ended up going for lower search volume. And in fact, when we launched our company, it was Beanstalk Search Engine Positioning, targeting a lower search volume query that I managed to grab in a few months so I could start making money so that then we could start growing from there, because otherwise I would just be bankrupt. And that's not better than having some lower traffic keywords. Took me longer to get to bigger keywords, but I never would have gotten there if I'd gone broke between those 2 points. So that was, again, a long answer to the content strategy I would take in starting out.
Love it. Yeah, awesome, awesome. I like how you share details, you know, practical tips. And I want to know about priorities. You know, Another trap that I often see when webmasters create a huge list of topics, keywords, and even if they sell, can help to sell products, it's better to set up priorities because it's hard to find resources to create a lot of high-quality content at scale. We need to prioritize, yeah, to choose the right keywords, the right topics. For example, for some projects, I only use two hands, nothing else. You know, for me, it's hard to create a lot of great articles, especially when I have many other things to do. So I can write an article a week, sometimes in 2 weeks, yeah, because I have no time. And it's right, not only me. Many other projects, websites have one copywriter, a few copywriters who can create high-quality content at scale. Can you tell about choosing priorities? How you choose priorities? Which keywords to touch first, second, third? Any tips about that?
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes realistically, it sounds like you face the same spot. You might never get to your secondary or tertiary priorities because by the time you would get to them, you've got some new primary priorities, right? Like that happens. I work in the machine learning space. By the time I would get to my secondary or tertiary, that model that I was thinking about might be irrelevant and we've got new models. Like now we're on GPT-5, right? Like that could very well be what's happening, right? So it does differ a little bit, but my general link building aside, content that we're building for links, like where we're trying to do either social sharing content or content where it's like, this will be, you know, good link bait. So we're putting that, taking that aside. And from just a pure practical site standpoint, I have to lean to one of two types of content. And this is, again, results may vary based on what your targets are here, but is first and foremost, what's going to drive opportunity, right? Like what's going to get people into whatever funnel it is that you have. And then the second priority, but I wouldn't even really count it as a, only because the first one needs to happen, because if you don't have the first one, the second one's irrelevant, but they're both incredibly high priorities, is what do I need to move people down the funnel? So I can have a great high ranking landing page, but if I don't have the services page that they need, or I don't have the explanation of my product that they need, or I don't have the supporting content to show I'm authoritative, bringing the traffic's irrelevant. It's a higher priority, I guess, than converting them, because if I don't have them, I have nothing to convert. So only from that context, I would prioritize the driving traffic. But I think a lot of people keep viewing, like we're in leaky rowboats and we keep just trying to put more people in rather than actually fixing the hole, right? Like we're bailing out and going, okay, if I just put more into the top of the funnel, okay, my conversion rate is like 1%. So if I want to like double my business, I have 1,000 visitors. I just need to turn it into 2,000 visitors. Or you can put in like Microsoft Clarity. It's free. You can record users through your site. Look in your analytics. I know we all hate GA4, but it does a really, really good job of showing some like really, really interesting analytics once you get the report set up for it. Take a look at what you have, because oftentimes it's easier to go, okay, actually, I only need to get my traffic to 1500, because actually I've seen that people are just like clicking my top nav and then not clicking on a thing. So something's missing from there. What's missing from there? What are they not seeing in my top nav? They're clicking on the one that services, but then they're clicking elsewhere on my page trying to find something. What are they missing? Build that thing and maybe just boost your conversion rate by 0.5% instead. It's easier to move that needle. So the content in my mind starts with drive your traffic, but the equally important, but only secondary because it's secondary in the funnel, is make sure that you're creating the content that is going to drive ops. It might be if it's B2B case studies, it might be something for your sales team, it might be white papers, it might be authoritative, it might be that. If you're B2C, it might be like making sure you have good reviews, reading the other review sites, making sure that like you're actually including all the details and specs that people want on a page so that they're not going, oh, I don't really know if I want this mouse, and then going over to TechCrunch and then clicking their Amazon link instead of buying from you or clicking your Amazon link, right? Like, these are just like quick and easy things that we can sort of do. But my priorities ride there first, but I take a, I'm sort of pragmatic and go, my first order of business as agency, as in-house, it doesn't matter. Protect what you have. That's the first thing. Then build to the next thing. So I do lean to, this is what I have. Build the resources for either myself or sales enablement. That's the next thing. Okay, now grow. Okay, right? Or, and I mean, you might have the resources to do both. God bless, I'm at a company that does. But if you don't, then I would suggest to make sure you're maximizing your impact, then work on your next level of growth, or just work 14 hours every day, right? Like that's your only alternative, right? Is to try and do it all, but that's going to last a couple months and then you're going to burn out. So
yeah, you can work like Elon Musk if you want, or you can choose your priorities, because we have other things to do. So yeah, I got it. Yep. Okay, Dave, let's talk about creating content. Creative content, non-boring content, because today we use ChatGPT, other AI tools, and most content creators complain that this AI generative model is not creative. Yes, of course, because it's the best rewriting tool ever. Rewriting, not copywriting. Yeah. But today it's important to stand out from the rest. Can you tell how to become creative in your content? And let me share a short story. Lloyd Richards wrote a book 11 years ago, and he couldn't sell this book for 11 years. But he spent 14 years to write this book, a single book. He wrote 14 years, then for 11 years he couldn't sell this book, like random sales. Then his daughter posted content on TikTok about this book. This video became viral from accounts with zero followers, but 50 million people watch this video. Of course, I watch this video because I want to know how to get 50 million views. And what I found, it's not like nice looking design, but it was creative, interesting. It's like authentic story about an author who spent a lot of many years to write a single book. And today this book is bestseller on Amazon. One creative video beats sales marketing methods, a lot of sales marketing methods, because it's creative. I'm not interested about video content. Of course, we can touch this topic as well, but I think it's important for any marketing, for website content, everywhere, to be creative. Can you tell how to become or stay creative when you use AI?
Yeah, I mean, that is a tough one. And I think you really, really touched on something that is important for everybody to understand, is generative AI is trained on what exists. Yeah. So that means it will never be truly, truly creative, because it only knows what is, not what could be, right? So that's, it doesn't have an imagination, is basically what that boils down to. So it can't be. So to be creative, and full disclosure, I'm not, like, we all have the left and right going on in our brain, right? My brain leans to the logic, not to the creative. So am I an incredibly creative person? I have my moments where I'll go like, oh, okay, I have a good idea. But mostly that's like, I'm like a ChatGPT kind of person. I've seen enough stuff in all of my years of doing this to occasionally seem creative, because I've seen stuff and pieced together things. So there are people who, on my team, for example, who are more creative by far than I am. Now, that said, if you either want to try to be more creative, or you are trying to enable those around you to be more creative, which is the role I take, is go, my job is just to facilitate creativity and get those things that rise to the top. The key is authenticity. So in my mind, and results may vary, and there are companies that can craft things, but in my mind, and in the just day-to-day trying to do this constantly, is let the people be creative, and then just tell them to do exactly that. So for example, we have a big initiative underway at my company right now. Rather than me going, hey, here's a tweet, do that. I've gone to 200 people in the company. Hey, here's what we're doing. Please write a tweet. Let them speak to their audience because I can't manufacture the messaging. Even our like social media manager can't craft a message for each individual person's audience. And when you fire out 200 shots, one of those is far more likely to go viral than if I try and craft one myself and go, please retweet this. Sometimes retweeting is great. It's a really, really low barrier to entry. I'm not saying don't retweet. Sometimes that's all you can do and go, low barrier to entry, really, really easy call to action. Share this thing. Like, we're doing this webinar, do it, right? Like, share it out. Everybody's interested. Imad Mostak from Stability is on, right? Like, to put it in our own thing, right? Like, great. It's an easy sell. But if you want true creativity, then you can't craft it with what you know. The easiest way I know, as somebody who's wants to facilitate creativity, I want to amplify creativity, but I don't necessarily know how to craft it in all of the different spaces. TikTok, not my specialty, right? Like this is not, I enjoy watching it, but I certainly don't create for it, right? Like I can bury hours in it, but it's not a platform that I'm familiar with how to rise up. I could talk to my wife. She does have things that have gone to like 1 million+ views. I do not, how does that happen? Hers was an accident, by the way. So that actually is a proofing concept of the point is just let 200 people do what 200 people do. And your odds of one of those things breaking through is better, provided that you've done all the groundwork. You have your profiles. Amazing that that was done with like somebody with zero followers. But you can hedge your bets by having a site that'll rank well, right? By having social profiles that people engage with. And occasionally going, well, here's a thing that I think is going to break through. Put $100 behind it. Put $500. Look, whatever your budget is, go like, okay, I'm just going to like blast it. You know, I'm going to boost this post, right? And just sort of like see what happens. And can that sort of like speed up the process? I'm going to put in this YouTube video and put a slight payment behind it or do a boosted post on Twitter, but to my YouTube post and see what happens. One of the big critical things though, that I think a lot of people miss on, I've missed it too, where things happen accidentally and I get caught up in them and I'm like, oh, I wished I'd been measuring stuff, is know what you're measuring for in advance whenever possible, right? Because it's way easier to like set up tracking for stuff in advance. Even if it's not successful, it's good to track what isn't successful and go, okay, here's the key tweet we put out. Here's the demographics we targeted. Yep, that didn't work. Okay, great. Because in my mind, that's going to happen more often than not. And if I do 5 initiatives and 4 of them bomb, just absolutely like nothing goes, and one of them goes viral and it 10Xs, then overall 5 of those things, I've doubled what I would have expected across all 5 things. So all of them are treated as successful because one of them was a breakaway. And we actually encountered that last year. We do a lot of integrations at Weights and Biases, like just with all sorts of different models and this and that. And then all of a sudden there'll be this breakaway models. And last year it happened, I don't know if folks remember, DALL-E Mini. It was the first text to image generator that became popular, made the cover of The New Yorker. We happened to be there. The developer of it worked with us, like we're very, very closely with us. Our site just like, so we got to be viral. It wasn't because we knew that was going to happen. It's because sometimes you don't want a sniper rifle, you want a shotgun, right? And you just blast out and eventually some stuff wins. And that's the rule of like sort of the 200 that we're working on right now. Let 200 people be a pellet in a shotgun rather than trying to hold a sniper and figure out exactly where you're going against a moving target.
Nice. Awesome. By the way, it's interesting. I removed my TikTok because, I enjoy watching TikTok videos as you do now, but I can't stop it. I can't stop it. I don't know why, but TikTok learned my mind. This social media shares videos that I love it. So yeah. I can't get the same issue on Facebook, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, only on TikTok. So after watching 2 hours, for a few days, I got it. I can't go ahead with that. I can't fight with that. It's better to remove.
Their algorithm is great. And then that, like, well, it's just another minute. It's just another minute. It's just another.
If I can create content on TikTok, then it's better to remove because TikTok provides a good job, an excellent job to share content that I love. Okay. Dave, I have the question about you. You know, today we have Friday. I don't know when the podcast will be released, but today Friday, and I see you have a lot of energy. So can you tell what kind of coffee do you drink in the morning, or any vitamins, any pills that can help to get this energy, or mindset, or yoga, anything to get the same level of energy?
I do consume a solid amount of coffee. I start my day with yoga and meditation. So that's sort of how I kick off my day. And then I wake up at 6, do that for about an hour into my morning routine, and then start my day at 7. So, and I find that works well. Nice. To sort of like start the day with a clear mind.
Great. And one more question is not related to SEO, about your camera. Can you tell what kind of camera you have? Because I see high resolution, you know, it looks great.
I want to like turn it around right now. I'm like, which Logitech did I end up buying?
Logitech, okay.
It is Logitech though, yeah.
I have Logitech as well.
I've had it for like ages. It's not a brand new one, but I've never needed something better than it.
Nice. Okay. I found that I usually get high results with clients who understand SEO. So if they understand, then we can move on like a cohesive team. We can create the right strategy. Clients understand why we need to create high quality content, why we need to create less but quality, how to choose priorities, many things about link building, PR. But if clients don't, I usually tell them, take my course. Learn from Lily Ray, Mike Phillips, Jeff Coyle, Chelsea Alves. Many great experts share videos on my course. It costs like $10-$20. It's not business model. It's more about to help them, you know, to understand SEO. Then we can move on. So, Dave, let's imagine you started today from scratch without any experience, knowledge, skills. What will you do today to learn more about modern SEO, considering that we have AI?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one. And I'm very grateful for when I started, for getting able to get a baseline of information before having to deal with what we're all dealing with now. I think for anybody, a course like that, and it depends on which area you're about to go into, right? So it depends. Are you about to be a technical SEO, content SEO, link build? Like, what is it that you're going to specialize in, obviously? But I think for everybody, having a baseline understanding of all of it is important. Even if you're going to specialize and you're like, you know, if you're like Jamie Alvarico, I know I've just mispronounced your name, but, and going like, I'm JavaScript, right? Like, okay, no, like, and is brilliant at that. I've worked with her. Even if you're like going that direction, she understands how that fits into the bigger picture. So yeah, 100%. Like a course like yours is great. Everybody should have that baseline. Then to deal with what's coming next, that'll of course really depend on what's going on. One of the areas that I'm looking at the most right now, because it's the biggest threat to SEO that I perceive. And it's a threat to SEO in the way that, like, when Google came out and said, we have PageRank and now we count links, the SEO was threatened. It's just like a fundamental shift in the way things are looking at in generative AI. When you have like ChatGPT and Bing generating answers, when you have Bard and Google generating answers, it's a fundamental change in the way things are created. I'll use my site or, or, like our site as an example, because it's a weird example, but everybody can look at it their own way, is I need to look like we do experiment tracking in machine learning. So ours is code based, right? Like the way you would implement us, the call to action that I would have somebody do is implement our code, right? So understanding that, and everybody's will be different. When I'm looking at my problem, I'm going, I need for ChatGPT and I need for Google to understand that when somebody types into their browser, generate me some code to perform this task with experiment tracking, mine is the code they need to understand exists. There's other solutions out there, but how do I train them that my solution is the one that they should surface? Right? And that's a very, very different question. It's not link building anymore, but it's actually gaining an understanding of what are they training on and how are they prioritizing the information that that training is leading them. Like link building, we don't have an answer. I don't know the authority score on different sites. I don't know the full page rank algorithm. I never will, but I can extrapolate certain bits. I know it's code, and I know GitHub is a rich resource for code, right? And it would be a fairly trustable one, and it has rating systems. Okay, so I'm going to look at GitHub now for us, right? Among other sources, because 100 links on one site is not as valuable as 100 site or 100 links on 100 diverse sites, yeah. All of them good, right? So making sure that we're looking at it that way. And that's, I think, one of the big issue, like for people who are now concerned about this new evolution, who are thinking about where does AI take us as an SEO? Where do I need to be looking at? I'd be looking at, well, I am looking at, okay, Common Crawl, one of the like training data sets. Where is that from? Google's Knowledge Graph API. What are they surfing? It's not actually the Knowledge Graph Google uses, but it can certainly give you some insights, and they have like free demos where you can like play around with chunks of coffee and see how it's surfacing entities from it. Which entities are they surfacing? What salience scores are they giving them? Which is like basically, here's the how relevant it is to that content that we're dumping in there, right? How is my content fitting into all of that? Where do I need it to be so that in generated text it is? Or you might be going, generated text is never going to be me. Right, like generated text will never compete. I rent vacation rentals, right? Like you're always going to need to see the pictures and engage. So, okay, how do you surface your content then? Is it competing against generative text if they show that up there for some of the queries you want? Or is it doing something that I would look at and am looking at, something that's going to be really, really hard for Google or Bing to generate on the fly is going to be video. It's going to be very, very cost prohibitive for them to actually generate video. It's really, really, text is bad enough for them and it's costing them, right? Like to be generating video would be horrible. And even if they get that, most videos, we're engaging with the person, right? We're hearing the voice. It's going to be a long time. And I mean, by long time, it wouldn't shock me if they have this perfected in 5 years, but we've got a solid window of time to go. People are going to want humans in video. Right? They're going to want a human generated video. So do I go, okay, I have queries that they're generating text for, but I don't want to be part of that generated text because it's irrelevant to what my actual market is. Because as we were talking earlier, this isn't about clicks, it's about money. So, okay, I just want people who are interested in a vacation rental. They're going to scroll a little further. Then there's these carousels, okay, I'm going to target video instead because video will be hard to duplicate. So I'm going to sort of get around the generative text as best I can and go, I can't fit in here, but I can fit in these parts by going into formats where people might just get fed up with generative text and go, I just know YouTube's going to be a better search engine for me here, right? And just going straight there for specific queries. And it is just a solid search engine to begin with, right? Like a lot of things.
Nice, nice. And Dave, my final question about the future. You know, we still have the question, is SEO dead? It's not. Today, it's not. Mm-hmm. 8 billion searches a day. You know, most traffic are coming from SEO. SEO can beat all channels today because I don't remember exactly, like plus 56% of all traffic are coming from SEO. But I disagree when people tell that SEO will never be dead. Everything has the end, but we still have time. We still have, I don't know, if like not 5-10 years, a few decades, we have this time. And it doesn't matter what kind of new content or format will come, because if you have experience with SEO, SEO doesn't teach you how to get ranking positions. SEO teaches how to create high-quality content, how to choose the right strategy, how to earn backlinks for human being, so PR and many other things. And I think like marketers who made marketing campaigns for TV and radio, they didn't lose their jobs. They just adapted to digital. And I think if you have experience with SEO, you can adapt to any other channel that will bring. And Bill Gates a few days ago told that Amazon will be dead and Google as well will be dead when someone will create a AI agent. I don't know what is it, but probably something will be good. So, okay. Anyway, Dave, I want to ask your forecast about the future in SEO, your prediction, what kind of future will be, and how marketers can adapt today to this possible future.
Yeah, I see a very, very interesting and flexible future for us in marketing. And those that can adapt quickly have a lot of opportunity ahead of them. And the thing that I think is going to be bridged over the next 2 to 3 years that there's been multiple attempts on is whether it's metaverse or whether it's not. I actually don't think it'll be a metaverse. I think that will exist, not in like a Facebook directed sort of way. I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll end up being right. I wouldn't be shocked, but some form of it where my video game experience is different than the one that I have now, where I just like run around with a controller and a big screen, right? But more than that, from the context of us as marketers, is more augmented reality is what I see coming. Like I believe if I'm going to, I don't have a crystal ball, right? So let's all understand, I'm not saying this will be, but if I'm going to guess, within 2 to 3 years, my glasses will have a little lens here. It'll probably be invisible that will give pass me information about the environment that I'm looking at. Small camera here. I'm looking at a store. It'll tell me, you know, okay, Google, well, let me just, I'm just turning off my microphone to Google right now. You know, okay, Google, show me the menu, and then just have the menu from a restaurant show up. It knows what I'm looking at, right? Like, but if we look at that as a step forward and go, that is part of search, right? Just like we consider making sure I have the right schema on my web page so that when my restaurant shows up or somebody's looking for a menu, it's all showing up in drop downs. You know, we have all of these like rich snippets that we want on a page. Similar to that, I think the placement changes where now the graphic is going to appear just in some like glasses, as well as on the desktop, of course. But that's where I think the big revolution, the big leap forward is coming, just because there's massive uptake in that right now. Like the hardware is finally catching up with the idea. It's not these big chunky Google glasses that are like just horrible, right? Like the battery life and everything is starting to get in there. That's where I think a lot of opportunity, and it's in things like that, that I think a big opportunity, a big leap forward will be for marketers. Do I think Google or Amazon will survive? I wouldn't gamble on it. I wouldn't gamble that they'll be major players a decade from now, but I'm still going to buy all the same groceries. I'm still going to take all the same vacations, hopefully more, but I'm still, right? Like I'm still going to have all the same stuff. I'm still going to need a new mouse. I'm still going to need, you know, new monitors. I'm still going to need to go on a date, right? Like all of these things are still things I'm going to do. So I'm still going to consume just as much. The only thing that's going to change is where and how I access it. Is it in search as we see it now? I'm still going to need to find stuff. So, but is the format of that going to change? I think in some ways, pieces of it will still remain. But I think what we need to be paying attention to really closely is there's rapid change. Anybody who pays attention to SE Roundtable and Barry Schwartz, if you pay attention to like, here's a test Google is running, it's massive. They're like interface changes. The tests they run, I tracked it. 1 month, it was like 17 interface changes just in the US in 1 month. And those were just the ones that I knew about, right? They're like buried covered. So yeah. If that's what they're doing, 5 years from now, it's not going to look the same. Keep up with that and then keep up with our users. And every time we see something conceivably take off, go, you know what? Like all of a sudden we've crossed 1% adoption in people like Dave, because I will be an early adopter in this one, by the way, having like the glasses with like a little piece of invisible lens to see stuff outside. We have 1% adoption from like Ray-Ban stats that's coming in. Maybe you don't deploy a full expensive strategy around it, but start documenting what that strategy will be and who can implement it. Because as soon as it hits 3%, you better start running because your competitors are going to catch up. And I think it's just where we consume information. That's my long way of answering. It'll be how and where we consume our information. But thankfully, we're all still going to want the same stuff.
Nice. By the way, you know, I have crystal ball, but it didn't work. You know, I tested. I bought lottery ticket. I bought stock prices, crypto prices. It didn't work. So it's fake. So yeah, it's hard to predict the future. I hope future will be fine. And my only one tip is to adapt faster new technologies. If you do it, then you can overcome your competition. You can go ahead. So it doesn't matter. AI, metaverse, just adapt fast. You know, because if you don't adapt, it's hard to compete with others. If Jeff Coyle on my podcast told me that in the future, we will have three companies. The first company will develop AI that we see today on Facebook, Amazon, Twitter, Google, all tech companies live with AI. The second company will adapt AI that I do, that you do, that everyone can do, because it's not like closed source, open source, use it. And the third company will be obsolete. Someone who can leave the trade. Yeah. So we can't ignore this technology. Dave, it's a big pleasure to get on my show again, to learn from you. I love your valuable insights. I love your way of explanation with a lot of details, you know, your energy, you're so energetic. I got it. Tell our audience the best way how to keep learning from you, how to follow you, how to reach out to you.
Probably LinkedIn is probably the easiest way. It's where I visit the most often. So you can go LinkedIn, just David R. Davies or Dave R. Davies on LinkedIn, or Online Inference on Twitter are probably the two easiest ways to reach me.
Nice. Guys, you can find the links to LinkedIn account, to Twitter in the description below. Listen to us on Apple, Google, Spotify. Thanks again for your time. Love it. So valuable. Welcome back anytime. I enjoy all our conversations. So valuable. I'm going to implement something from your suggestions. And guys, I recommend to anyone to follow Dave on LinkedIn because you can see a lot of value. Okay, love you. See you.
Thanks for listening to this entire podcast. Please rank your experience in Apple, Spotify, Google, or any other platforms that you may use. Also, please share your ranking mark on chat at seotools.tv to get a special gift. We'll see you soon on other valuable audio podcasts.